You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hi, this is Tanya Pinkins, and you're listening to my podcast on the Broadway Podcast Network. You Can't Say That, the show where you can. I was predisposed to hate my next guest's work. First, the title, Slave Play. Ugh. Most of what gets produced and raved about in New York is blacks as slaves, degenerates, murderers, or being murdered. I did not plan to say it. But my intern, Jasmine McLeish, told me she loved it. I respect Jasmine, so I decided to risk it. With a free artist ticket, of course. And from the minute that white man walked onto the stage, I thought, Jeremy is writing my life. I was on board for the ride. And I can still understand everybody's point of view who says it's dangerous, it's doing a disservice to black women. But all I can say is opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one. Chiquina Calcango and I shared the stage in Katori Hall's Seminole Hurt Village, which opened the first season of the Signature Theater at the Pershing Square Theater. It was her first play just out of Juilliard, and we also shared the Broadway stage together in the musical about the life of Tupac Shakur, Holler If You Hear Me. Join me in welcoming my guests on You Can't Say That, Jeremy O'Harris and Chiquina Calcango. This is the inaugural The Virgin You Can't Say That podcast. My first guests are Jeremy O'Harris, playwright, Devo extraordinaire, and Chiquina Calcango, beast, actress, singer. So, Jeremy, how does it feel to be popping my cherry today? I bet you didn't think you'd ever be doing that for a woman, did you?
I never thought I'd do that. I mean, I think, I mean, honestly, when I lost my virginity, I lost it to someone who was like already not a virgin. So I don't think I've ever had that experience.
Well, today you are popping my chair.
That's just major. That is major. Especially from Tanya herself, who I think the internet knows I am like the biggest fan of. So this is always, every time I'm in your presence, I freak out.
Oh, cool, cool, cool. And Jackie and I, we go way back to Hurt Village. Katori Hall's play at Signature Theater, and then we also did Holler If You Hear Me together on Broadway.
Yes.
Wait, and how many performances did Holler If You Hear Me go?
yeah. But you know what was fantastic about Holler If You Hear Me on Broadway was that those producers were they were first time producers on Broadway. They were like movie people, and so they knew they were going to lose money. They knew they had a great show. And so they gave away all the tickets to the Sailors, to SEIU. And so every night we had a packed house.
That's amazing.
Even though they weren't paying. So we played to full houses every night, screaming, hollering. We played to the audience that should have been marketed to.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that doesn't happen more often, because for me, like even at our, I mean, and again, like I'm not, you can't say that, but we did our invited dress and I was so advocating that we give as many tickets away to people as possible. I was like, we have to, like, it's just like, we have to do it. And like, everyone who works at these theaters are so nice. They're very kind. We're there. Thank you. But it is annoying that there's so much dumb red tape that everyone feels, because again, it feels like being at Yale or grad school for me, where everyone would be like, well, we can't go outside of that line. I'm like, the line doesn't exist. And they're like, but we can't go outside of it. They said the line is there. I'm like, but I don't see a line because it doesn't exist. So I'm always someone who just is like, I'm like, this is a matrix. It's a simulation. Like, we can go through it. Like, what's the worst that can happen? And I understand, like, our show is special and there's security stuff that everyone's worried about. But there were literally 75 seats still in, like, the area of the mezzanine I was in at our invited dress when we had, like, 700 people in the audience, most of whom were students under – and it was the greatest audience. But there were these girls that waited for me after the show they're like, oh, we ran from NYU to get here after we saw your tweet. Because I tweeted, come, you're invited.
Oh, my God.
And I got in a little trouble.
They let you do paper an entire house off social media?
Halfway. They got upset. They got a little upset when I literally said, don't just DM me. You're all invited. They're like, you can't just tell the whole of internet that they're invited.
Why not?
I don't know why you can't.
Why not?
We had a line down the block for invited dress.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, and again, this is going to sound really bougie, but since going to Yale, since before I went to Yale, I've never done a show that didn't have a line going starting. Like, I've never like made a play for a not open house, except for the play I did at Dixon Place. And I was like, never again will I have this small of an audience.
And how did that happen at Dixon Place?
I didn't know enough people in New York. Okay. I've never been a New Yorker.
Okay.
So I always would fly in for like a week and be like, but like this last time I was like, when I did the play after that play at Dixon Place, I was like, oh, I'll make my friends DM everyone. And so social media has always been my way.
Okay. Now tell me about the DMing everyone. I don't even know how to do that. What does that mean? Like, what does that mean? DM everyone.
No, Jaquita, you know
brilliant.
How to DM. You know how to DM. You've DM'd
me
a couple times.
What do you do? How do you DM people to tell them to come to something?
I mean, like specifically on Instagram, you click on the person, you send a message and you say, hey, let's reach out. How many people can you contact? How many people are your followers? Get the information out. Tell them to come to the theater to see the show. And people start posting it and putting
really?
It. People repost hashtag slave play. That's how you get all of these people to come to see your show. And Jeremy knows everybody. And he's incredible. He's such a good, kind spirit that like literally anybody on the street.
Oh, we know this is not true.
It's like just his own being just pulls people in a way that I've never seen happen. And it's beautiful to watch. That house was ridiculous.
And I think what's cool about that is there are some people who will never be able to afford what we might offer.
Yeah.
And there are some people who don't want what they can get for free.
Yeah.
So there's an audience that wants to pay.
Yes.
And there's an audience that can't pay. But that audience actually is going to be your word of mouth that's
yes.
going to be telling the people that want to pay. And I think people lose out when they think, oh no, if you can't pay to come see this, then we don't want you. That
yeah.
audience is important. That's
it's really
Amanda
important.
Palmer really proved that with how she raised the money for her album.
Mm-hmm. And I think that something that I was so sad about was that like obviously like these kids had passion. These are 19, 18-year-old girls who literally had gotten done with the studio, saw one little text or one little tweet or one Instagram story and said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to run to the inn, go to Times Square, run to 45th, and run in front of the theater to wait in line. And they did that. And like because of red tape, they wouldn't let like, and I think it was like 30 kids that were still waiting outside that didn't make it past that line. They wouldn't let them go in.
And there were empty seats?
There were empty seats. And I'm just like, that's such a missed opportunity. But I think that like after the success of that, and like, I mean, so something I found out last night from one of our co-producers is that we are now, well, the day after that invited dress, we sold more tickets than almost like any single day we had sold tickets because of the video of me and Robert's speech. Like I think sort of drove
what's
tickets
the video
in.
Of me and Robert's speech? What's that?
What's
well,
that? Robert gave, I mean, and the New York Times sort of talked about it in their little article today. Like the
we didn't have that.
So
there's, tell us.
So there's
the
a cover of the fall theater preview in the New York Times, the paper of note, apparently.
Oh, okay.
According to some. So, I mean, I'm excited about the email I'm going to get from Miss Adrienne Kennedy about it because she always, whenever I'm in the New York Times or Robert's in the New York Times, she emails us.
Okay.
She's very kind.
Okay.
But something that he says, he started our first rehearsal by being like, you know, talking about the responsibility we have and like what we're doing by putting the word slave on a marquee in the middle of Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to know what that costs. It should
mm-hmm.
cost people something to walk into a form of entertainment
mm-hmm.
Under a marquee that says slave on it.
Yes.
No matter how long it's been since slavery was abolished, we have to carry that and we have to know what we're doing. And we have to know what we're doing this whole thing. And it was just like, it's so beautiful and it's so hard to follow up. And so I did the thing that I do, which is just sort of like try to make everyone laugh
mm-hmm.
By also just being real and saying the things you're not supposed to say.
Like what? What did you say?
I talked about money. Like the fact of money, the fact that, like, you know, late capitalism is killing theater. Mm. And late capitalism does not want and has uninvited poor people, black people, young people to the theater, because mm-hmm. those aren't the people that people see dollar signs for. Mm. And we had a thing at New York Theater Workshop where we opened the doors to those people in our invited dress. And it was so easy and so great. And it got a bunch of people there. And all those people who came for free, everyone said, you know, people are always like, oh, we can't give people for free. Even the people that they hire to be like diversity, whatever. Right. They're like, oh, well, you got to make people pay something or they won't care. And I'm like, that literally makes no sense.
Exactly.
Like, if I had to pay for Facebook before I had it, I would have never used it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But once I had Facebook, I bought like all this other shit that went along with it. You know, I bought an app or two. I bought this. You know, that's how it works. You know, yes. But you give the, you know, whatever.
It's loss leader. You give somebody something. You're like, you know, you're feeding them. You're getting them to come into the store, and then they'll buy a lot of stuff. But you got to get them in.
Yes. And also, not to mention mm-hmm. the fact that, like, for me, I keep saying this thing about how how we do like community engagement in theater is so reductive and so misses the point of why black people and brown people and young people don't go to the theater. And the reason they don't go isn't because they aren't engaged. It's because they're like, engagement is like a fallacy. You can be engaged by anything. I'm engaged by this microphone right now. And mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about it before I came in here.
Right.
But what they haven't done is invited them. Mm-hmm. And what you guys did is invited us in here. And when you invited me and Jaquina in here, you asked us if we wanted water. You asked us if we wanted coffee. You gave us a place to sit, and you didn't ask us to do anything for it.
Yes.
That's what an invitation is. And so the first time you invite someone to something, someone who's never been invited, you should lose something. And maybe that thing is like a ticket that night.
Right. I so agree with you. But then you receive a DM from one of those kids, which I did in my Instagram, who said, thank you so much for tonight. I'm saving all of my money. I told all of my classmates we're buying tickets and we're saving up our money so we can come again. I received those after the show and it was like, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
It was beautiful.
So I know that first night was very, very hype. And then last night was your first preview. And I think this show is going to air probably around your opening. But so we'll be talking about things that happened before. So night one, first night on Broadway. I know it wasn't Jackie's first night on Broadway, but it was your first night on Broadway. Tell me, was Broadway everything you thought it would be or more?
It's actually like, I mean, I don't know what I thought it would be. You know what I mean?
It's a little underwhelming.
Yeah. I saw my first play on Broadway 4 years ago. I'd seen a musical on Broadway, but I didn't see my first play until 4 years ago when I saw Lucas Nave's play.
Which one?
Doll's House.
Yes, Doll's House too.
I saw Doll's House on Broadway for free because my friend from Juilliard took me. And I remember being, it was so cool to see that set and everything, and to be in like a mezz, you know, yeah. which I'd only really done in London. And also it's crazy because you can see a show in London, for £30. And the tickets for that show were like $200. Mm. So I would have never seen. But anyway, it was, but I don't even know. I think I was more sitting there with all the notes I had for them.
Okay.
And not so much the play and like the experience. And I think I was still getting shocked that like, it was working.
Mm.
You know, I think that had been my biggest fear is that like some of the things that people had said, people who've like been around the block.
What did they say?
Oh, there's no way this will work on Broadway. This play doesn't make sense in a house that big. You know, how are you going to maintain the intimacy that this play requires? I mean, Jeremy, it's only, you say it works, but it worked for a 70-person audience at Yale and a 199-person audience at New York Theater Workshop. But is that Broadway? Like, well, how is it going to work for the person from the Midwest or the Upper West Side? Like, how is it going to function on them?
As if those people don't have sex.
I don't know. But I was really nervous about what the energy was going to be like because the first night, and Jaquina can talk more about this because it's still something I think I'm going to dream about and think about for the rest of my life. But having 600 kids, when she comes out and starts twerking in Slave Guard, be like, hey, hey,
like,
hey.
And literally. I was telling Tanya
so
this.
Us,
like, I felt like Megan Thee Stallion or like Cardi B giving a concert. And people are like, hey, I get it. Hey. And you're like, yes, I can twerk. And I'm twerking in a mirror. And these people are hyping you up.
The okay, but energy, what about when Massa came in?
And then, and when Massa come in and then you hear me speak for the first time, everybody goes, oh! And that's the fun of theater.
Yes.
Literally, the atmosphere can be changed in 3 seconds. And
yes.
They were a part of the change. Every second, I felt like they were fully invested. They were fully vocal. They were just so alive in a way that I've never experienced in a play specifically. Yeah. It was like, it felt like a concert. It was crazy.
And it affirms something that has been one of my biggest frustrations about criticisms from people online, which is like, he made this play for white people.
Because
I'm like,
nope.
When you have that many young black kids in a room, black and brown kids in a room, understanding immediately what's going on, there's no way. Because there's never been a white audience who've been like, hey, when that's happened. Never. And that's the intended, like, that's what the performer's supposed to feel. Yeah. That's what I'm supposed to feel. And I felt so, it felt so right to have 700 people getting it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Now, night two.
Yeah, that was none of that. That night two came out, I looked at myself. I said, all right, self. You're going to have to figure this out for yourself, boo. Dance in this mirror for yourself.
Okay.
And for your character. It was a different atmosphere.
Right.
And it took them a while, I think, to warm up to the situation.
Right, so you had a lot more older white people the first preview.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know...
And even older black people. I saw them in the first two roles,
that's
too.
That's the crazy thing, too. The only people I've seen at the box office buying tickets, I'm always outside having a cigarette. I'm sorry, I smoke. But I'm always outside having a cigarette, and there's always a black person buying tickets at the box office, which makes me so happy.
Okay.
So I'm just like, oh, yeah, I saw like three of them the other day. I was getting interviewed by NPR, and the NPR guy was like, well, who's that? And it was like this young black kid was buying a ticket at the box office.
Okay.
So I feel like we are going to see, but they are mainly older.
Yeah.
So who do we think were these people that wanted a petition to shut it down at New York Theater Workshop? What kind of people?
I don't know.
Old white people, old black people.
I don't know. Russian bots.
We have no idea. Russian bots. Could have been some Russian bots decided they were going to shut it down because you can't say that.
Well, you know, something, my friend Casey Gerald, who's an amazing novelist, he was there. He's a novelist now, but he's a nonfiction writer. He got a DM because he was like, he wrote a whole piece. He was like, seeing Slave Play the first time, I loved it. But seeing it a second time, like, changed the game for me. He was like, because this is a play you had to continue seeing.
Agreed.
He was like, the second time I saw it, the first act was so much funnier than the first time. Like, it was like, actually, I felt the breath and blah, blah. And he was like, I'm going to see it a third time next week. And then someone DM'd him. He was like, that's interesting because that's exactly how black people responded to Color Purple. He was like, do you remember? And he was like, no, I was like, not around when they came out. And he was like, well, the first time everyone was like, we need to talk about this. We're not sure how we feel about this movie, blah, blah, blah. Then the second time everyone was laughing. They were into it. And the third time everyone was like, we love it. And now it's a classic.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, I think that there is always going to be that journey for black audiences, of especially when something's popular in white spaces or has a white gaze in and around it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jackie, the black woman's part, that I think that's the place where people focused, black women in particular, focused a lot of energy of like, you know, how can we picture a black woman like that? What's your feeling about who this black woman is and what you're bringing to it?
First of all, I just want to say thank you to Jeremy for writing a very complex character.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on this amazing journey, and there's so many colors to play. And I don't see that in a lot of theater work, specifically for black women like me. And so to have somebody who is completely undone, who is messy, who is dealing with some shit, who has issues, who is extremely in love in this relationship, who is easily triggered. In the world is exciting, honestly, to play as an actress, just from that standpoint. But also, what I love about this character specifically is that she's reclaiming her sexuality. Mm-hmm. There's an ownership that's happening, and I think for black women, since we've been in this country pretty much, we've never had ownership of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this way, she's doing that in this production in a real way. And I think it's a beautiful thing to see and experience on a stage and for other young black women to see, too, and to just take the taboo out of it, because our bodies have literally not been ours for so long. And we're living in the stage. We're living in this day and age of Cardi B's and Megan Thee Stallion's and all of these women saying, no, here we are. Here is our body. Here's Nicki Minaj. I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. And what are you going to do about it?
Right. I think it's a hard thing, you know, because our bodies were taken and our bodies were treated like they were animals and bred in your home state.
Yeah.
And so I think it becomes this, it's a challenge for people to feel like, are we feeding into what they did to us? Are we feeding into their projection onto us? And to be able to separate from that from, no, this is me trying to express myself in my fullness. You know, I think that is just a fine line that we're walking, because we are not in a post-racial or post-slave society even yet.
Yeah.
Did you read Morgan? Did you see it yet last night? Were you able to see it?
No. See what?
The play.
No, they did invite me. I hope I'm on the opening night list.
You are on the opening night list. Very high up. Very high up on the opening night list. I mean,
also, sitting next to Oprah or something.
If Oprah will come.
Okay. I don't know.
Maybe we'll sit you beside
Rihanna.
I've been
in rooms with Oprah. I don't know.
Rihanna has texted me and said she's coming. So we'll see if that's true.
Me and Rihanna can be hanging. I could like, Rihanna, can I have a selfie? It's gonna go viral.
But Morgan Parker, who's a black female poet that I'm obsessed with, she wrote a book called, her first book was a poem in and of itself in the title, which is like, there are things more beautiful than Beyonce, which is like a gag of a title. Like, it's just like, what? Like, and like, you know, and then apparently that title got her in trouble because we were like, what are you talking about? What's more beautiful than Beyonce? And she's like, I don't know, a sunset? Like, But she saw the play and loved it and was like, I think that you and I are the same person. And like, I read her poems and I was like, oh fuck. Like, she wrote a better version of like this play I wrote earlier. I felt a kindred spirit in her. And so, there was one critic, one of the black female critics who wrote something that I thought was like well written. Like I did, but I did have umbrage with a couple of her, critiques.
Like what?
Well, the main critique that she had that was like the sort of, because she wrote the like FUBU review, the like for us, by us review.
Okay.
And I was like, well, that's an, like, I mean, I know black people who liked it. So it's like, who is the us that you're like for, if you're saying like, I didn't like it, I don't know if it's for us. Cause I was like, well, who's the us? Like, what makes a black person a us and a them? Like, I'm confused. But anyway, but so that was already one intellectual conceit I wanted to like, problematized. But then the other thing was that she said she went through the program and she didn't see a black director or black a black female director or a black female writer. And no black female dramaturg. So that made her feel like the play was like not a safe space for like black womanhood. I'm misquoting her and I don't want to, but that was ostensibly the sort of like, or what I took from what she was saying. Like, it didn't feel like there was like representation of her identity inside of the playbill, even though we had a black female stage manager, a black female assistant director, there were multiple black women in and around our black female costume designer, a black female lead, another black female actor, whatever. There were a lot of black women that like, I felt like were represented inside the place and did have a lot of power in our room, but that was in and of itself something. But then she said she looked at other black women in the room and she said, like, sort of telepathically, she saw in their eyes that, like, they also were not here for this play. And therefore it was like, you know, she had questions.
Well, I have a question, and that is, are you in this play?
I am.
Who are you?
I think I'm a little bit of everyone in a very real way.
Okay.
And I think that, like, especially the thing that I got... that really like racked my brain in a weird way was like in and around discussions around like what happens to Kenesha. I mean, someone on this, on the black podcast that comes out, it's Drew Shade's podcast. They had said, you know, I just didn't want to see this black woman debased this way. Like, they used the word. And I was just like, have you had sex? Like, I mean, like, and not in a way that's like any, that, again, you can't say, I'm not being shady. I'm literally just saying, like, it was something that rubbed me the wrong way because it felt so, like, kink-shamey and, like, sex-negative. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like anyone who's had sex in 2019 or even, like, has been on the internet in 2019 is like, heard someone say, like, choke me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As a part of, like, sexual discourse.
Right.
And, like, it's, like, so casual now that, like, 12-year-olds tweet it to Harry Styles. So I don't know that
I... Oh, my God.
Yeah, they do. It's, like, a thing. They're like, choke me, daddy, like, literally to Harry Styles.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, are we literally going to allow ourselves to live in such a conservative space as black bodies inside of the theater that we're going to have this closed a conversation around what's happening at the end of this play, not to mention what's happening at the beginning of this play, you know? Because for me, I, as someone who has a lot of different types of sex, I am not like at all nervous about saying that like I have like been in sexual situations where I've wanted to dominate someone and I've wanted to be dominated in some framework of fantasy,
yes.
Even if it was for 3 seconds, even if it was 3 hours. And that's like not a bad thing. It's a like natural thing.
Agreed. So for me, when I saw the play Downtown, I felt like, oh my God, he just wrote my life. I've lived this. This is my life here right now. And I have to say that I had just taken a class with a woman who had been a Taoist nun and one of the highest paid dominatrixes in the world.
Wow.
So I had been coming out of that space. So I was totally into the BDSM world. And for definition, I want to say to all of our listeners that in the same way that people who are the majority on the planet are called minorities, the way the language gets construed and things mean the exact opposite of what they are in reality, that's kind of the truth of BDSM. The dom, the good dom, is the servant. The good dom has to put all of their attention on the sub and must guide and follow and can do nothing that the sub does not allow. The sub is in control. And that is what it is to be a dom. And so I have to say that after seeing the play, I went home to the man I was seeing, who happened to be a white man. And I said, I want you to do this for me. I said, I want you to, when I come in tonight, I want you to undress me. I want you to tuck me in bed. I want you to make me a cup of tea, and I want you to leave. And it was so sensuous, so incredible. It was really probably the first time I had gotten to be the sub in the relationship, and he refused to ever do it again. Vehemently, violently began to call me a lesbian, because for me, that's what your play is about.
Yeah.
He liked me to dom all the time.
Yeah.
He wants me to put my attention on him, and my requesting him to put the attention on me was unacceptable. And that's what I experienced of what Kenesha is doing, what every one of the people of color in your play is doing. They are saying, no, put your attention on me, serve me, make me feel good, please me. Let's switch the dynamic.
Yes.
Well, don't be speechless.
I mean, I am a little bit. Yeah, it's exactly true. And I think even also aside from the sex, I think just being a black person in this society, we have always been taught to please. We have always been taught to serve. We have always been taught to make you feel comfortable.
Correct.
In this world.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been completely ignored in a sense. And so there was so much affirmation I felt like I received when a lot of the kids came during the invited dress, of just hearing their responses to Act Two, mm-hmm. and them recognizing themselves in relationships, recognizing certain words and sentences that hit them in ways of where they felt affirmed, where they were like, yes, this hit me in a way of like, I am worthy, I am deserving of this. This mm-hmm. recognizing themselves, I think, is so important, because we don't do that in society. And honestly, this character, what I realized, I think, about myself was that, especially in institutions and going to Juilliard specifically, I was silent for a lot of my experience at that time. I could not articulate what was going on in myself. And I'm glad I had like people like Danielle and Corey in my class, that I had some black people who I could talk to. But I remember we had a very uncomfortable talk about race in our theater history class, of all places. And there were white girls crying, and me and Danielle were angry and upset, you know what I mean, by a lot of it. And there just was never a place to fully release and talk about this thing. So when you see this in an artwork, when you see this in a play, you're like, damn, I wish I had this. I wish, I want so many people to see this, so that when you do leave your town and go to these institutions, to where you really are the minority, that you have a framework and you have the ability to talk about what you're dealing with in a way that people can recognize. And I think this play is the perfect introduction to that. And I wish more people would come to see it because of that.
For me, like, I don't know why anyone would make a play. Like, when people are like, I don't know. They just didn't feel like real people. They were like ideas. I'm like, yeah, It's a fucking play. They're not real people. Her name is Jakina Kalakinga. She's not Kanisha. So I don't know why you think you're seeing a real person on stage, because you're not. And like for me, like one of my favorite things that Jeannie O'Hare ever said to me, Jeannie O'Hare is one the head dramaturg at the Public Theater now, but she used to run the Yale program. And one of the things she told me when I applied to school, she was like, you know why I like you, Jeremy? That you feel like a British playwright to me, because you don't write in simile, you write in metaphor. Mm. She was like, a lot of American writers write in simile, like this is like that. Mm. But like you write in metaphor, so you let an image speak for itself mm-hmm. and transform and become multiple things to multiple people. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was always like it was sex, but it was like the nation. It was sex, but it was like it's a white man, but it's also Yale School of Drama. It's also DePaul Theater School. It's Come also, on. You know, it was all the places where I had witnessed a lot of the times specifically the black woman in my life, like not have the chance to articulate exactly because of all of the pressures of society puts on black women to behave a certain way, to be a certain, the fact that every black actress I know what isn't taken seriously unless she has the kind of voice where she can do this in a monologue. The black girls who are like actually ingenues, who like talk here and are also just as amazing, and all the white girls who do this don't get to play Juliet very often. They don't. They get to play like, you know, like maybe the nurse. The nervous nurse who talks like this, but she doesn't get to be Juliet even if she, because all the teachers are like, well, I mean, she's never going to work. We need Angela. We need a real Angela out here. You know what I mean? And like I saw those dynamics starting to form at Yale with all of my girlfriends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to part one of my interview with Jeremy O'Harris and Jakina Kalakinga. Part two is coming up next.
This episode was produced by Dori Berenstein, edited by Alan Seals, with music by Anthony Norman. You can find more information and other great Broadway-related podcasts via broadwaypodcastnetwork.com/youcantsaythat.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.